You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What kind of mission were you on?
Don't lose. Don't lose mission. You know what I'm saying? Damn, that feel good. I wish my son and my family come down here. I don't know, man. It's just a lot of emotions, a lot of injuries. I was getting an MRI yesterday on my wrist. A lot of shit going on. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I just want to get over there with my team, Rach. Respect. Appreciate it.
Chris Paul is headed to the NBA Finals. What is up? And welcome to another Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. I am Jackson Gatlin, host of Locked On Rockets. He is Matt Moore, senior NBA writer at the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. And we are here to discuss a great night of NBA basketball. Maybe not so much a great night if you're a Clippers fan, but really emotional night for Chris Paul as he and the Phoenix Suns make their first finals berth in, what was it, 23 years, Matt?
Is it? I think it's got to be more than that. It was 93, so
28 years? Math. 28 there we go. Years. Math is hard. That's a thing. It's been a long time for the Suns, and we're gonna break down this really exciting game of basketball, what the implications are for the Suns moving forward, the Clippers, how they look going to the offseason. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for our Michelob Ultra moment coming up later in the episode. Now, Matt, I know you and I were just kind of taking it in, right? This is for a player like Chris Paul to finally make it to the finals. I mean, it's a pretty big occasion for his career. Like I'm struggling to find the words to really do it justice, because I really truly believe like CP3 deserves this. When you look at how often he has been, you know, how many times he struggled with injury, so many different things coming up over the course of his career, and he truly is an all-time great. And now he has a chance to really cement that legacy in the finals.
I started covering Paul my first year I was blogging. Like his 08 run was one of the reasons that I started writing about the NBA. It was that team with the Hornets, with David West and Tyson Chandler. You know, and he stuck it out there, and that
what,
team.
Whoa. No Peja love? Come on, man.
And Peja Stojakovic. Good,
that
good
it was a lovable team. It was a great team.
Great team. Gennaro Pargo.
It's not. Oh, Pargo, there we go. Okay.
Gennaro Pargo.
What a throwback.
You know, he had the 2011 run where he was just incredible versus the Lakers. Like, it was one of the most impressive playoff performances anybody's seen. And it was just futile because he didn't have enough help. He gets, you know, he forces the way out of New Orleans the way so many guys do, goes to the Clippers, Lob City. It's really weird to look at Lob City because, one, they were hated by the end. Two, it was a weird collection because the young guys weren't ready to win yet. And Chris was in win now mode all the time. And it made for awkward locker room politics. But the team worked. Like, they won and they won and they won. And they had so many chances. And they had that incredible series versus the Spurs in 2015. That first round series was one of the best I've ever seen. Chris Paul was playing on a torn hamstring at the end of it and still managed to have like magnificent games. And they're right there on the doorstep. And then your Houston Rockets with Josh Smith come back the other way and knock them off. He had runs where it looked like maybe they were going to be able to do it. And then everybody got hurt. Like, there was that series versus the Jazz where like everybody got hurt. They've just had so many times when it's fallen apart for him. The reason he grates on everybody and be like, well, no, it's because he's a flopper. Oh, okay. But you know why he flops? And everyone's like, because he's a flopper. Oh, okay. The reason that Chris Paul flops is because, in my opinion, since Kobe Bryant retired, Chris Paul has been the most competitive person in the NBA. I don't know anybody who wants to win more than Chris Paul. Like, every single game, every single minute, every single possession. I just absolute lunacy in terms of wanting to win. You find that when he's not in that basketball mindset, he's different. Jackson, I got to tell this story real quick. Like, I went in New Orleans for one of the New Orleans All-Stars, and I also can't remember because, you know, the pandemic warped time. But the last one of the ones they had in New Orleans, I went down there And they were having a special event at the school that CP3 had poured like a ton of money into. Like, it's in a bad part of town to the point where the cab driver was like, I will take you this far and no further.
Okay.
But I really want to go see this. Went to the school and Chris Paul walks in and the kids go absolutely nuts, but not because they hadn't seen him. Like, they'd seen him before. Like, they were, he was calling out kids' names that he'd seen, and seeing that side of him does definitely like change the perception of him as this growling, snarking, vicious person that he is on court. He was so emotional after the game tonight and so amazing in the game, complete with requisite unnecessary flop that made everyone livid. It was really just incredible to see this 16-year career where he has wanted to win so much. There are guys that just, they're there and they happen into winning situations, you know, and they contribute and they're huge and they hit big shots in game 7 of the 2016 finals. But there's other guys that like really have to wait and really have to earn it. And they try so hard and they never get there. Chris Paul's played, has come back from, do you know that he's had both his meniscus removed?
I did know that. Yeah.
Both meniscus removed. 16 years in the league. Do you know how much you have to work to get your body back in to every single year to compete at the level that he does?
He has worked tirelessly to get to the point that he's at, to accomplish what he's accomplished. And that's why this milestone, I think for anybody, just if you're just a fan of the game, right? Again, you're right. Chris Paul does great on you a little bit. You hate to play against him, right? You hate it when your team is up against him. But for anybody who has had the chance to cheer on Chris Paul or to not have like a horse in the race, right? And just try to appreciate him for what he is, he truly is the, I think you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, since Kobe Bryant, I think he is the most competitive player in the league. He hates to lose more than he likes to win, I think. I think he's got that like mentality about him. Mm-hmm. And you were going through his Clippers days, and obviously when the Rockets, you know, spoiled them in the 3-1 comeback that they had. But then you have his tenure with the Rockets. It makes it, you know, all that much harder even for me to watch this level of success that he's having. Just not even 2 years removed from him being traded with two picks and two pick swaps out of Houston because Tillman Fertitta believed that he had the worst contract he'd ever seen in the NBA because James Harden issued an ultimatum because there's blame to be thrown around for everybody. Not even 2 years after that, Chris Paul is going back to the finals. And honestly, a James Harden like finals appearance, like with the Brooklyn Nets, would have felt like kind of cheap. It really would have, right? Forcing his way out, teaming up with Kyrie, Kevin Durant, would have felt cheap. This Chris Paul one feels very earned. Like, it feels like he truly worked for this one. And I think I'm honestly going to be happier in a Chris Paul championship this season than I would be a James Harden championship, like, actually.
And, you know, the other thing is he could have bought out the contract. He could have been like, look, I've made $300 million in my career. I'm good. You know, like, I'll take from the OKC. He could have been like, look, we'll buy me out for, you know, $10 million or whatever. And Presti would have done it, most likely. Presti would have been like, if that's what you want, like, you get to make this decision. And he could have gone and teamed up with one of the super teams. He could have gone to LA and done that. And maybe that's what he'll do. Maybe he'll opt out and take that opportunity next season because he has that player option that he's reportedly going to take or going to opt out of. But he chose the Suns. He looked at the Suns and he looked at Monty Williams and Devin Booker and a team of young guys with a few vets and said, there, like, I can get it done there. And that to me is such a cool story that he's done it with a franchise that honestly has had great stretches for as much as everyone has rightfully trashed Sarver. Like, look, they were awesome in the mid-2000s with Nash and Amari. Like, those Suns teams should have made the finals and they didn't. And honestly, the Suns with Barkley were incredible. That 93 run was amazing. That team was stacked. It was awesome. They ran into Jordan, you know, and now this is like a year where it looks like the window is open, and especially with what unfortunately happened last night. So, you know, there's going to be talk about like, well, the injuries and look at who they played, all that. You play who's in front of you. And Chris Paul and the Suns have gone through everyone that's been in front of them and have absolutely earned this NBA Finals appearance. And it's a really cool story.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have this discussion another day. I hate the talk of like asterisks and whatnot. No, you play who's in front of you. They have absolutely earned this trip to the finals, and it'll be great to see who they wind up playing in the finals between the Bucks and Hawks, which we're going to talk about those two teams in the third segment. We want to kind of break down what actually took place in this game a little bit, as well as kind of talk about some things from the Clippers angle, seeing as how this first segment just kind of became a manifesto to a tribute, if you will, to Chris Paul.
Point guard.
Praise to the point guard indeed. Which, look, that brings us to our Michelob Ultra moment, which how could it be anything other than the moment, you know, the final buzzer happens and it's official, it's sinking in. Chris Paul and the Suns are headed to the finals, right? That has to be the moment. Or can you think of a better individual moment, Matt?
No, because like there were so many daggers that he hit. That, like, Clippers
just
cut it
one
seven.
After another, just bam, bam,
rattles like, them mean, off. But yeah, for me, actually, was when Ty Lue finally pulled the plug and pulled the starters, and the Suns did the same, and Paul came over to the bench and was so excited. But maybe the moment though is when he broke off the post game. Like, Chris is always the consummate professional, right? Like, you talk about the various attacks on people's private parts in games, or you can talk about the flopping or whatever else. But like, Chris is like the consummate professional. He does media. He always owns up to it. He knows what to do. Like, he'll always do the post game interview. And like, he broke away from Rachel Nichols because he was like, I just gotta go be with my teammates, and like runs over there laughing and yelling. And like, that to me is what that Michelob Ultra moment's about, right? Like, the joy, it's gotta be worth it. If you have to enjoy it for it to be worth it. And Chris Paul enjoyed this moment.
I agree with that 110%. That is going to be your Michelob Ultra moment of this game. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Thursday, he is Matt Moore. I am Jackson Gatlin. Now, Matt, let's spend just a moment kind of looking at this game, you know, really quickly before we kind of attack things from the Clippers side. I mean, just to throw out some of the numbers from here, I mean, Chris Paul matches his playoff career high, 41 points, 8 assists, you know, in a closeout performance, was absolutely transcendent in the second half of this game. 31 points in the second half of this one, 16 to 24 shooting overall, 7 of 8 from behind the three-point line. You know, this was him absolutely leading this Suns team to the win. But there were some other guys that, you know, deserve their flowers from this Suns team, you know, in this performance. Jay Crowder, who, you know, really picked it up offensively in this one, really, you know, potent from behind the arc. And then another guy that I want to make sure we shine some light on, Torrey Craig, was insanely good in this game. I think team high plus 28 in 31 minutes off the bench. He had Paul George in hell defensively. Like, I mean, he was playing with a level of aggression that was just so admirable, really getting into the chest of Paul George, making life so difficult for him offensively. And my biggest concern coming out of this game is, I already saw it on social media, on the TL, you know, after the game had concluded, you know, 80% of it's, you know, celebrating Chris Paul. And then there's that other like 20-30%, whatever. And people are trying to like slander Paul George. And I don't think he deserves it. You know, he has really stepped up to the plate in the absence of Kawhi Leonard. He led the NBA in minutes in the playoffs. By like a wide margin too. I mean, he's been, you know, getting like the Allen Iverson treatment in the playoffs, and he came up short in this game. It's the elimination game, yes, but I don't think he should be crucified because of it.
PG was great in these playoffs. Like, look, the Suns team found resilience, in my opinion, because of him. Like, the Suns Clippers team, the Maverick series, they were going to win that series. Like, it's cool the Mavericks took those first two games, but you know, the Clippers were the better team in that series and just needed to get themselves right. But then in that second round series versus the Jazz, you know, they come back and even up, and then Kawhi Leonard goes down. You're still having to go on the road for 2 of 3 without Kawhi to beat the number one team in the league, team of the finish with the best record. And PG steps it up, goes thermonuclear, and carries them past it. That team had a lot of heart because they believed in Paul George in a way last year's team didn't, because I think Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams didn't believe in him. I thought Paul George's leadership was great. He ran out of gas. Like, you could see it tonight. He was just gassed. Sometimes you just don't have anything left. He had played so many minutes. And also, Paul George isn't the guy that takes off on defense. Like, he's engaged in guarding on the perimeter and trying to guard Devin Booker and doing all this stuff defensively. and he's trying to run the offense and he's trying to score. Like it was a big, that's a lot for him on this many minutes after this kind of a schedule. You know, Kawhi Leonard doesn't get hurt. We'll see what happens. You know, we have no idea what would have happened. You know, you got to think the Clippers are at least able to get it to seven, if not win it. They were without Serge Ibaka, which would have helped a lot with the front court. But like ultimately tonight, like a lot of it was just like the Suns offense was what won this game. They had a 138 offensive rating. They cooked tonight. Like that's not on Paul George. Like that's on the Clippers defense. And, you know, part of that was Zubac was out too. Like they had so many injuries. Marcus Morris after the game said the healthiest team won. Got to give them credit because Marcus Morris is never going to give the opposing team the credit it deserves. Even after a series in which he played above his realistic ceiling. But like, I do think that ultimately, like PG, I think has raised his profile. I think people are starting to be like, okay, now Paul George is pretty good. And this Clippers team is going to, I think, learned a lot from this run. And if they can get Kawhi back healthy next season and maybe make a few tweaks, they'll have to replace Reggie Jackson, which is going to be huge. But there's no reason this Clippers team can't make another run. And I think PG has earned himself out of the doghouse as far as NBA Twitter goes, even if there are still going to be holdouts.
You talk about the Clippers defense, right? You know, there's so much going on with the injuries that they had sustained, right? They're out there, they're having to trot out DeMarcus Cousins, you know, for stretches of this game, you know, as a big, and he was effective in some stretches, like offensively, but then getting just absolutely destroyed in the high pick and roll on defense. It was, and I mean, that's the sacrifice you make when you just don't have enough healthy bodies to throw out there. Cousins, a guy who hadn't seen a whole lot of run up until what, the back end of this series. So I mean, I think when you look at this Clippers team moving forward, are you comfortable, like if you're the Clippers, are you comfortable just kind of running it back, right? And basically like hoping for health more than anything? Obviously, you talk about Reggie Jackson needing to replace his production, but, you know, you get Kawhi back, conceivably Serge Ibaka, who was, you know, supposed to be a big part of their plans, having that kind of switchable big to be able to still anchor the defense, but you know, not having him around was definitely a pretty substantial blow to what they wanted to accomplish. So are you comfortable running it back if you're the Clippers, or do you need to look to maybe make a splashy move this offseason? Do you think you have enough where you're at right now?
Let's assume Kawhi comes back, because I think
there's not a better situation for him out there, I don't think.
I don't think so either. Like, people are going to talk about the Heat, but they're not going to give him the kind of, we've talked about this before, they're not going to give him the type of control he wants.
No.
Like, Kawhi Leonard wants control over everything. Playing time, practices, scheduling, when the plane leaves, everything. He wants control of everything.
There's no way that he and Jimmy Butler would coexist. It's not.
I mean, I think they would be fine, but I think the Heat organization would be like, no, this is how we do things here.
You don't reasonably think that like Jimmy Butler might take some exception to like Kawhi picking and choosing when he wants to practice and load manage and all this?
I think there might be some work ethic Butler.
Like,
no, because here's the thing is like Butler's always, this is a big thing. If you've won, then it's different because Butler's like, you're certified.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
So I think that's part of it. And superstars just tend to give each other the benefit of the doubt. Like, Cat's not a superstar. And so Butler wasn't going to give him that. Ben Simmons isn't a superstar, so Butler wasn't going to give him that. I think there's not a better situation for him. So let's assume he comes back. I do think they got to solve the front court. Like, the minutes with Zubac were really good in the series, but it always kind of felt like an aberration, and like the wheels were going to fall off eventually. I think even if Zubac comes back, they might have been able to push it to seven, but I still think Ayton wins those minutes. Like, they figured out in this game early to attack with Ayton versus the small ball. Like, the fact that Zubac couldn't play versus the Jazz, and then really like the reason that they were able to get that game five and extend the series is because they had to go small with Zubac out. Like, they need to figure out the Serge thing. If Serge can't go, if he's just past the point of being able to be relied upon, you've got to have a better small ball five option than I think the Marcus Morris. I think Morris gave them great minutes this year, especially in the playoffs. But I do think that like they need a more versatile, switchable big. They need a stretch five they can really count on. That to me is like what's actually kind of missing in this. The Clippers defense was never at the level it needed to be this season. It just wasn't. And ultimately that was their undoing. They played great for five games of the series. The first four games of the series, they did awesome work defensively versus the Suns and got them all out of whack. And then they won game five with offense, and then they lost game six because of the defense again. So that's where I think that they've got to retool, as well as replacing Reggie. There will be other guards on veteran minimums that are going to want to come. They'll have other opportunities with other guys there. But I do think they're going to have to really look at the front court and figure out, we need to play small. Is Marcus Morris really the center that we want to go to? Or do we need another option to go to beyond Zubac?
Serge Ibaka pending, of course. But before we move on and get to our segment talking Bucks, Hawks, and you know the other side of the bracket, what's you know going to be awaiting for the Phoenix Suns down the line. But Patrick Beverley, man, the shove in the back on Chris Paul, like that's the most unsportsmanlike thing that I've seen in a minute, and I'm a huge like Pat Beverley advocate. Like, I mean, he's a competitor. You love the fire and the intensity he plays with, but that's just unnecessary, man. And I know that I know that they had said something like, you know, Chris Paul had said something to him walking by, but you know, you're gonna talk smack throughout a game, and to lose your composure like that and go shove a guy when he's walking away from you in the back, like I lost some respect for Patrick Beverley for that. And this is coming from a guy who, you know, I cheered my ass off for him when he was in Houston, and still love him to this day, even as a non-Houston Rocket, because he's just one of those players that makes a permanent imprint on you when you have a chance to cheer for them. And to me, that was a really disrespectful move on his behalf.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a bad look. It's too bad for him. He never wanted to go to the Clippers. He wanted to be with Houston. He loved being a part of that Houston team. And you know, he was traded and was always worried he was going to get traded, and
was traded for the guy that he shoved. So
yeah, for the guy that he shoved to eliminate him on the Clippers, which is kind of brutal. I think I'll just say this. Look, Beverly's got a history of various extracurricular activities and stuff that is borderline unacceptable, if not across the line unacceptable. I think for a guy that's had to fight as much as he has to have an NBA career, there's always that sense of, if I let up for a second, if I control my emotions at all, I'm going to lose what makes me great, and I'm going to lose my spot in this league. And that's a really hard situation after a really long year. So I try and have empathy and just be like, he was frustrated. He did something dumb. He's not the first player. He won't be the last. Like, this will be, there are guys that do this. Like, people were freaking out about the Jokic flagrant, and it's like, yeah, Nikola Jokic never does stuff like that. Patrick Beverley does always do stuff like that.
It's a little bit more on brand for Beverley.
Yeah, it's a little bit more on brand for Beverley, and I get that really frustrates people. But you know, look, I do kind of take the position of, he's had to fight so much in his career just to have one that I can't applaud the fact that he plays with so much passion and emotion and then be upset that it boils over. Is it acceptable? No, but he paid the price for it. He got ejected. He'll get fined. He'll likely face a suspension for next season when it begins. All that, like, he'll pay the price on it, and we can move on, because again, this is how it goes in the NBA. And there are always going to be guys that won't ever give that shove. And there were always going to be guys that, maybe when even they should. And there are guys that will give that shove even when it's not necessary. And Patrick Beverley is the later.
All right. Well, coming up, we are going to discuss Bucks Hawks, as well as getting into, we had one other thing to discuss in there, and I totally blanked on it just now. Help me out, Matt. Bucks Hawks and
the Giannis Antetokounmpo injury.
There we go. Well, that's Bucks Hawks, but there was something else that you're talking about.
And the Lakers add themselves an assistant coach.
There we go. That's what we're going to get to in just a moment after a message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Because look, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's basically impossible to stock your local chain auto parts store with all the different parts that you need. So why not just visit rockauto.com? Their catalog is remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly find all the brand specifications that you need for your car. You don't have to worry about showing up to the shop and they don't have what you need. The prices are always competitive. Why would you want to spend up to 30, 50, or even 100% more for the exact same part? So go visit rockauto.com. And this is the really important part. When you're checking out, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Thursday. Quick reminder that today on our road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Now, Matt, with this Bucks-Hawks series, both the stars out due to injury. I mean, no updates yet on Giannis, other than it's not structural damage to his left knee, but still no idea whether or not he's, I mean, doubtful for game five. Yeah. So probably not out. And then we're still waiting. I haven't seen anything about Trey unless I missed a report.
Nope. He'll be listed probably as questionable tomorrow morning, and then he'll be a game time decision. It's a bone bruise. Those are painful. That's tough to deal with. If he does play, he's not going to be the same guy. Giannis, it's weird. Most guys with a hyperextension would be like, oh yeah, we're not going to see him again in the series. No, but Giannis is a little bit of a psychopath. Little crazy Giannis, much like my Chris Paul. He's got that competitiveness. Here's like, let me kind of put it in these terms for you. This is what the Bucks are facing. The Nets are out. They got hurt and the Bucks eliminated them. The Lakers are out. You have to beat the Suns, which, great team, have played awesome, have gotten injury breaks along the way, are a beatable team. They're really good. They're awesome. They're beatable. This isn't a juggernaut like the Lakers or the Warriors. You got to get past the Hawks, though, to have that chance. You have to get past the Hawks. It's now a best of three series. This might be your, like, you don't know if you're going to have another, like, if this is the best chance that you're going to have. If you let him play and he suffers a bigger injury, not only do you risk losing him for longer term and maybe losing next year as well, but also, even if he wants to play, that's the kind of thing that a free agent remembers and blames you for later when his contract is up, or if he just asks out in 2 years, even with 3 years left on the deal. So, like, there's a lot in this pressure-packed situation on the Bucks. Like, I tend to think that they have to just be like, nah, man, like, come on, you got hyperextended, let's just sit out.
But you look at, you go back to game four, and obviously Giannis only playing, you know, about half the game before the injury occurs. And you look at the results from that game, and Middleton, just really rough game, you know, minus 25, only 6 of 17. Drew Holiday, tough night, another 6 of 17 performance. No, the Bucks are still the better team. If you just completely remove Giannis and Trey from the equation from both teams, the Bucks are still the better team on paper. They should be the better team on paper.
They should be.
I don't know that they are, is the problem. That's so weird.
There's two things to consider here. I got a stat for you, okay?
Hit me.
In the regular season, the Bucks hit 10 or more threes in 64 of 72 games. Okay. In their 15 playoff games, they've only done it 8 times. They've hit 10, less than 10 threes in 7 of 15. That's how bad their shooting variance gets in the postseason.
Why? Like,
I don't have an answer for you, Jack.
I mean, defenses tighten up. I mean, there's a bunch of different possible answers, but yeah. You look at the guys that they have on their roster, and it shouldn't be happening. Yes. And the biggest one, and we've talked about this before, is these ghost performances from Chris Middleton, where seemingly he like chooses to wake up and not miss any shots that he takes one day, and then the next day he'll wake up and go 5 of 23. And it's like,
but it's
what
not
are
just
you
that
doing?
Though. It's because here's the thing: you could say like, well, we've seen this from the Bucks before. Okay, we haven't seen Drew Holiday in these playoffs before with this team. We haven't seen PJ Tucker, even though he's not like a great shooter, in these playoffs with this team. Like, we haven't seen Bryn Forbes in the playoffs with this team. They bring in new guys and have the same problem. Jackson, it's insane. A side note to that, when they do hit 10 or more threes, in the 8 games that they've done that in this postseason, they are 7-1. All they have to do is hit 10 threes and they can win the game. And they can't get to 10, Jackson. The other thing here is the reason what you're talking about is, I think when you say like, I don't know that they are the better team, the Hawks play, they're dogs, man. Like Bogdanovich is barking at sidelines and hitting big three-pointers. Him looking back to normal in that last game was a big deal. Lou Williams and Gallo are not great playoff players. But if you're like, hey, we need you to go out and get buckets, fine. No problem. Can't play defense. Can get buckets all day long. Like Gallo's in a really good groove right now, which is – honestly, he's been really rough the past couple of seasons, and the fact that the Bucks can't take advantage of it is an issue. At the same time, as a sign of like what I think about this Bucks team, I bet the Bucks in game five. Okay, I bet the Bucks when the line first came out at
six. Did you bet online?
Yeah, and so down the stretch, right before the game, when Trey's announced out, that's when I was like, oh no, I knew it. Like. That's like, cause that's the kind of thing that screws everything up. It screws. I've talked to coaches about this and they've told me, I did a piece on this in 2019. I asked a bunch of coaches this. I was like, why is it that teams tend to struggle when a star player is announced out like right before tip? And they said, there's two things that happen. One, the team facing them has a letdown. Just, oh, come on. We got this. They don't have Trey. Come on, come on. Like, there's no way they could beat us without Trey. There's no way to, he's like, and the one coach is like, I've tried a million different ways. There's no way to combat it. They're just going to have an emotional letdown. You can get them back into the game and win it, but I expect to go down in those games. And the second thing he said was, the minute that guy goes out, you have an emotional boost from the other team that one is like, let's go win this one without him. We can do this together. Let's win it for him, et cetera, et cetera. There's also the effect of the agent is on the phone with the guys that are stepping up and being like, hey, if you have a really big game in this spot, it's going to help with your next contract. And like those things all run together. And you can say like, it's the postseason. You still shouldn't lose to the Hawks without Trey. Totally agree. And yet that's like what the Bucks do. I'm trying to figure out, it does feel like to me that even though the Bucks have more talent, that the Bucks without Giannis, for all of his offensive weaknesses, I think is a strong term, but limitations, I still feel like they're more vulnerable than the Hawks without Trey, who could just play loose and are going to shoot threes and like all of these things. I think it's tough in Milwaukee, but I really don't know what to make of this series now between these two teams. It can go really either way. I have no idea how to figure this out if neither of the stars play going forward.
It really feels like from the Bucks standpoint, right, their entire approach to how they approach the game completely changes without Giannis. With the Hawks, their system is, you know, largely kind of still the same. You're still going to have, you know, they plug and play Lou Williams in there and he's going to be your primary ball handler and, you know, create the looks for everybody else, score the buckets. You know, it's not, there's still a drop off going from, you know, Trae Young to Lou Williams running the show, but it's not the same because they don't have, there isn't another Giannis on that team. Like as much as they would like, what's his brother's name? I can't pronounce it. Why am I messing it up? Thanasis? No, that's not it. Thanasis, there we go. I got it right on the first try. Didn't have it pulled up. Should have had it pulled up. But, right, as much as they would love to plug and play him as Giannis, they can't. There's not another Giannis on that team. There's not another guy that you can conceivably give the ball to and replicate even 60% of what Giannis is going to do, at least from like a stylistic standpoint of how they attack the Hawks. Whereas the Hawks system largely kind of stays the same with Lou Williams, you know, operating pick and roll with Clint Capella, John Collins, creating shots for his teammates. You know, even if he does that again at like a 60% clip of what Trae Young would do, I think it's just a little bit easier for the Hawks to replicate their usual formula than it is for the Bucks. And they're going to need Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday to step up and have big games. They need another set of like game one games from those guys if they want to win.
Yeah. I mean, look, the reality is the Hawks are still going to give you opportunities. Like the Bucks played just like garbage. They played like garbage. They shot like garbage. You can play like garbage and still beat the Hawks if you shoot well, and you can shoot okay and still beat the Hawks if you just execute, but you can't do neither on a night when they're absolutely red hot.
A lot of this is going to come 10 down to
like, yeah, a lot of this just is going to come down to like the variance. I do kind of wonder though, like, look, run pick and roll with Brooke Lopez, you know, get Drew Holiday in space, push the tempo a little bit. And if you can just attack them, even though Giannis is such an advantage inside, I think Bobby Portis has played great in the series. I think he can give them a lift. if you play, you're solid. You still have better defenders on the court. Like you're facing Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari. You still should be able to get enough stops. Like put Drew Holiday on Bogdanovich, lock him down. Put Middleton on Lou Williams. Probably, I would say, still say drop. Like live if Lou Williams scores 40, but contain the threes from everybody else. And I think the Bucks can still win this game and win this series. And then you've got till next Thursday to get Giannis in a place where maybe he can play. And if not, maybe by game three, he can play and you can afford to drop two and then get back in the series. You got time, but you got to get out of the series. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is tomorrow. I put the emotional edge, I think, with the Hawks, but I still think that in terms of balance, the Bucks should win. This is what's been weird about the playoffs, right? It's like the Bucks should win the series and it's like, ah, but they're struggling, but then they win. Right. Like this happened all during the Nets series, and it happened in game one versus the Hawks, and it happened in game five versus the Hawks. Like they have these spots where it's like they should win and they just don't. But then they've wound up winning anyway. So we'll see what happens. I'm also, to be honest with you, Jackson, I'm just waiting for the next injury. How am I supposed to not just wait for the next injury? Because every 30 seconds, somebody else is going down.
So many injuries these playoffs. I mean, it's again, we've discussed this before. It's a damn shame that we've had to see so many injuries to so many big names for this playoffs to turn out to be as competitive as it has been, because it's felt like a really competitive postseason. But it's because of the untimely injuries to so many of the NBA star, you know, big names that have kind of knocked out some of the, you know, presumed favorites for each of the respective conferences, the Nets, the Lakers. I mean, you just point to you can blindfold yourself and just randomly like throw a dart at a board and you're like, oh yeah, they had a major injury this season. Great. And that's awful. Like and it's just terrible. But let's get to our last bit of news before we wrap this thing up. So Los Angeles Lakers are finalizing a deal to hire David Fizdale as an assistant coach. And this looks like he actually turned down an offer from the Indiana Pacers that as reported by Mark Spears. So, I mean, this is nice for the Lakers to be able to pull in Fizdale. I'm a big Fizdale fan. I think it's a good get for them. Any thoughts on the hiring?
LeBron guy. He loved his work with Miami. That was a big reason that he wound up getting the Memphis job, and a big reason he wound up getting the Knicks job. And it's a big reason he's getting the Lakers job. Fizz has admitted that he screwed up with Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol has admitted that he screwed up with him. And then in New York, the situation was just a mess. Like, as always, it was just a mess. And so he got caught up there. I think an assistant role is good for him. I still think that he needs... It's interesting because like I've interviewed him and he comes off really well in interviews. And I still kind of think that he's learning how to identify with different personalities. That's a tough thing for coaches. Like they can connect with some guys, but not all of them. And like, that's like a real thing that you have to be able to do, is you got to be able to connect with like different personalities, or you just got to be so good at everything else. That's like, why are you complaining about you're winning and you're getting paid? Like that's the Mike D'Antoni approach. Like Mike D'Antoni is not building like strong lasting relationships with guys. Like he's friendly with them and good with them and an affable guy. And everybody likes Mike D'Antoni, but Mike D'Antoni doesn't take like the Michael Malone approach of like building a strong relationship. He's just like, yeah, no, we're gonna play offense and you're gonna score a lot of points and you're gonna make all your contract bonuses and we're gonna win a lot of games. And players are like, cool. Yeah. So I think the Fizz has got to work on some of that. I think Fizdale over Jason Kidd's an improvement. I think that's a considerable improvement. But with the Lakers, ultimately, all of it's just going to come down to how they retool the roster and can they get healthy for next season, and can LeBron make another run?
Is this, and maybe this is a stretch here, this isn't like one of those, like maybe if they come out, you know, out of the gate and, you know, slow start next season, they need a scapegoat, fall guy. This, you don't view this as a situation where they make like Frank Vogel the fall guy, do you? And then they like tap Fizdale as like the interim?
Man, that's not a...
I don't think it's that far out there, but it's kind of one of those, like, you come off of a disappointing playoff out. Yes, you had the injuries, but it's one of those where it's like, if they need a fall guy, you're not making LeBron the fall guy. You're not making AD the fall guy.
Right. So, if they struggle out of the gate, that's always the change that you make, right? Like, a lot of it just depends on what... Again, so much of this just depends on what LeBron and AD want. Like, does Clutch think that Vogel's the guy? Like, that's really the question. But I'll say this, you know, like... Jason Kidd was brought on and everyone kind of thought that he would wind up taking Vogel's job. and that didn't happen. And I think Vogel's done a really good job of building the defense, and they should be right back there next season. After that, then yeah, I think you got to be. I think if you're, here's the thing, I think if you're coaching LeBron, I think you're always going to have to look over your shoulder a little bit.
Look over both shoulders while you're at it. Just, yeah. Oof. All right. Well, that is going to do it for our show today. Be sure to follow Matt on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Be sure to check out Matt's work, of course, for the Action Network. But that's going to do it for our show. Be sure to subscribe to the show, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Himalaya, all those different places. Share the show with your friends and family. We would sincerely appreciate it. That is going to do it. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA Thursday.
Praise be to the point god.